This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 5, Episode 40. Bowl, eat, drink, sleep, bowl. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we focus a lot on bowling. We help a player who's having a bit of trouble coming back from his second spell. And what about when you've got a 37 over old ball that's completely ragged and you can't do anything with it? How are you going to take wickets? Well, we help another player to do that. And we also talk about Matthew Wade and his amazing ability to throw the ball at the stumps from just about anywhere. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome again to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to coaching better cricket, to playing better cricket, and better cricket in every single dimension that you could possibly think of. All three of them, all five of them perhaps. My name's David Hinchcliffe. I look after things here, and my co-host is the esteemed Director of Cricket Coaching for Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Hello. How are you? What an intro that is.
Well, you know, I like to think of new words to describe you, and saying the Director of Cricket Coaching every week gets a bit boring for me, so I'm sure it gets a bit boring for other people listening.
That's lovely, mate. Thank you.
So I try, but it's a fine role, so we have to come up with new ways to describe it that makes it exciting and interesting. And there'll be someone listening to this who's never heard it before, so what an introduction.
It certainly is.
How are things going at school with the boys? Is there much going on there?
There is. We're actually finishing the day for half term, which is tremendous news. So everybody's worked incredibly hard across the school for the last 7 and a bit weeks, and we're all in need of a break. But this morning we had a sprint session, which I took part in, so my legs are like lead at the moment. So that was at 7 o'clock, and that was after... Last night we hosted Marcus Trescothick here for an evening with, where he was interviewed and went through his career, the highs and lows, from scoring hundreds for England to mental illness issues, which he covered in great length, which was incredible to listen to from a first-hand experience, and also some of the work that Trez is doing with other people suffering with the same type of challenges in their life. So that was wonderful for the kids to hear about. And then he talked a little bit about India, because we're going off on tour to India in December, so talked about some of the things that he learned over there that might stand them in good stead. So it was just a really nice evening, and a nice way to finish off a good half term.
I'm not a big reader of autobiographies, even cricketers. I tend to find them a bit dull, you know. And then we had a game against New Zealand where we got 267 in the first innings. I got 13 not out. You know, it's like that. It's all a bit, it can be a little bit dull sometimes. But the Marcus Trescothick one I did read, and I found it exceptional and marvellous. And it is one of the best autobiographies I ever read. So a fantastic insight into the mind of a top-level sportsman and what can go wrong.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, he wrote it as part of his treatment process to get things out there, because there are a number of things, because it's a lonely place, isn't it, going through some of the challenges and the tribulations that Marcus went through. And it's something that you want to keep really private. But inevitably, with him being a public figure and lots being written in the papers and lots of people speculating, he needed to get his views across, because there was a lot of rubbish being written and spoken about at the time. So whilst doing that, he also realized halfway through writing the book that there was probably some really good information and advice for people that are likely to be going through similar things. And the amount of inquiries, emails, questions, phone calls that he's fielded as a result of that book, because people read it, and whether they're cricketers or whether they're in business, whether they're in other aspects of life, whether they're parents, we all go through some challenges in our life, and some people find it very difficult to deal with them. And, you know, one in three people, Marcus said last night, at some stage in their life will have a bout of mental illness, from either lasting a couple of days or lasting over a far longer term, such as himself. So it's something that he's helped build the awareness of, not just within sport, but also outside of it as well, which is fantastic.
Yeah, anyone who says that sport exists outside of those things, those individual things, those personal things, those societal things. This kind of experience just goes to show that you can't separate sport away from the rest of the world, and that's an important thing to remember. If you can remember that, it gives you a context. But saying that, let's specifically now throw the rest of the world away and talk instead about a particularly good piece of cricket that I noticed on the internet the other day. It was an Australian cricketer called Matthew Wade. Is that right?
Is Matthew Wade, wicketkeeper.
Yeah, and he performed quite an extraordinary run out, which if you haven't seen, it is on YouTube, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, where he recovers a ball which is hit out onto the offside behind square, and when he picks up the ball, the batsman looks like he's going to be well home. And by the time he's dived away from the stumps and thrown the ball underneath his own body to hit the stumps from an acute angle, the batsman's not even in the frame. So it's quite an amazing piece of fielding. What did you think about it, Gareth, from a coach's point of view?
Well, I thought it was obviously magnificent. You can't help but watch it and think, you know, what athleticism, what awareness in the first instance that something like that was on. And the interesting thing about the game was that the game was very much a batter-friendly game, wasn't it? So those sort of performances and those sort of set plays or that play that he put in there has completely changed the context of the game out of nowhere. And it doesn't surprise me. I've watched him play cricket quite a lot, and he's a very busy cricketer. He's a very alive cricketer. And probably the reason why he didn't play more cricket for Australia is he's just not got the runs that his talent has allowed him to, or should have allowed him to get at the top level. But in terms of his athleticism, fantastic. And he's obviously somebody, and we've seen it in games of cricket because he's done it on a regular basis. He's done a lot of fielding. And I always encourage my wicketkeepers to get out there in the field, because normally they add something to the fielding group, because they can take their perspective from behind the stumps and take that out into the field. But also, just from an athleticism point of view, it's great for them to get thrown, to be picking balls up on the run, to be diving without having their gloves on and their pads on. And you could see all of that in amongst that run out where he did have his gloves on. So the first thing he had to do was to get rid of his throwing hand glove, run across with his pads on, dive full length, and whilst in full length, throw the stumps down with amazing power. That's the thing that got me. It wasn't just that he managed to do it, but the power that he was able to get. And you can imagine him doing loads of practice when it's peeled down with rain, and everybody goes inside, he goes out with a mate, and they're just sliding around and chucking balls around when the easy option is to go and sit in the clubhouse and have a pint or have a cup of coffee. And that, to me, is where that sort of athleticism and awareness comes from. It's those decisions that you make when it's easier to sit inside and you go outside and do a bit of work on your own. It's nothing that's coach-led, that. That's all down to the environment that you're in and the choices that you make as an individual. I just thought it was brilliant.
Yeah, that basis of athleticism is where it all started, isn't it? That ability to get your body into that position, and then from, you know, being in the air, to get the ball going in the opposite, all your energy's going one way, and you can get the ball going in the other way at high speed. It's quite a feat. I guess that kind of thing starts long before you reach the professional level of cricket. It starts when you are very young and learning how to move and how to run around and what it takes to enjoy just physically moving about and getting into those positions, right?
It's completely about that. And this is one of the challenges, I suppose, with formalised coaching happening so young within our youngsters, within the game. So, you know, if you go along at age 7 to a cricket session, my argument would be, should you be learning grip, stance, backswing? Should you be learning long barriers? Or should you be learning how to run, jump, fall, dive, throw, hop, land on one leg, and those sorts of things? And I would suggest that from the age of, you know, as soon as you can do it, that's the sort of stuff that is really beneficial. One of the guys that I work with out in Switzerland, one of the first things that he does with 3-year-olds is get them on a trampoline. So they start to learn to bounce, and they start to learn to fall in a fairly safe environment, and they start to learn to be able to orientate their body and organize their body to be able to do, you know, sitting down onto the trampoline and then springing up again, landing on their front, and all of those things. They're incredibly valuable, and you can see all of that physical competency, as I call it, in that body movement from Matthew Wade whilst he's taking that. Now, I don't know whether he got thrown up on a trampoline or not, but his the gymnastic element of that, which is the fundamentals of athleticism, was very, very apparent in that particular play.
Yeah, gymnastic is a good word for it, isn't it? You know, athletic, it's powerful. Those things are not necessarily taught. It's important to have some kind of formal element in there, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. I mean, on Fridays, we have a junior athletic group. So this is our 13, 14-year-olds come into the gym. And, you know, they haven't lifted a weight. They're just learning movement patterns. And we're doing lots of bouncing and bounding and landing and rolling. So every session that we do, so I mean, and this has been great because I've done it with them. So in the last couple of weeks, we've been forward rolling. Now, for a 41-year-old who never did this particularly well when he was this kid's age, it's been absolutely brilliant. But I've challenged myself to do forward rolls and handstands and walking handstands. And even at my age, I can do them. But these kids are now doing some fantastic things that 4 or 5 weeks ago they'd have probably laughed at and said, oh, there's no chance of me being able to do that. And where's the relevance? Well, the relevance is when you then go into the field and we ask them to dive because they have an ability to control their body as they land, as opposed to landing really heavy. They have the ability to understand that if they push down into the ground, then their weight goes the opposite way. You know, and we practice all of these things in a gym context whilst learning some basic movements like lunging and squatting and all of those things without any weights. But it's so important to have that gymnastic foundation, I believe, when we're looking at real good athletes and, you know, balance and coordination and being able to fall and being able to bounce back up again, yeah. Being able to throw, being able to catch, all of these things are the foundations for any sporting movement, but in particular when it comes to fielding, it's so, so relevant. And anybody who hasn't had a chance to look at the Matthew Wade thing, hopefully my words here will be echoed within what you see at the top level of the game, doing a run out that we'd have said 2 weeks ago was impossible.
Yeah, impossible things are only impossible until you do them, and then suddenly they're not impossible anymore. Okay, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no to, no matter how much more that we want to say. And the eagle-eared amongst you have noticed that there's no Sam Lavery this week. Don't worry, he's on holiday. He hasn't got an internet connection, so we've given him the week off. He'll be back next week. Until then, I will ask the questions, and I'll also sneak in underneath the radar and give my own answer after you've done yours, Gareth. So here we go. First question. Tennis players need less coaching.
No.
Yes. Second question. Train harder, win easier.
Yes.
Yes. Third question. You might as well be stumped by 3 yards rather than 3 inches.
No.
No. Coming up now, it is the mailbag. And the way that this works is a couple of questions that are sent in by listeners to this show or readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. And we do our very best to answer those questions and come up with a winner. The person with the best question gets a prize, which is an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And our first question this week is from Blake. And Blake says, I am a medium fast all-rounder who plays junior and senior cricket on Saturday. I'm struggling to bowl in my second spell because I'm tired from the first. Some weekends I play cricket on both days, and on the Sunday I struggle to bowl at my usual pace. Do you have any solutions?
Well, I think we've got a workload issue here. And again, you know, we're talking about what we sort of had guidelines in the ECB around 7:40. So in any 7-day period, we look to bowl no more than 4 times and no more than 2 days on the trot. So it sounds as if you're beginning to lose pace as a result of workload. So we focused here on the weekend, but obviously there's going to be some stuff in the week that leads up to those weekend games, and it's really a case of looking at how much you're bowling, and also, you know, how regularly you're bowling as well. So the 2 days is that we don't want to bowl any more than 2 days on the trot. So for example, let's be hypothetical. Let's say that on a Friday night there may be a practice. Well, ahead of your game, you don't need to be bowling on that Friday night because you've got your 2 days of bowling back to back. And then I'm interested in what you do on a Monday in terms of recovery, because anybody who bowls 2 days on the trot is going to feel it. And so, you know, what's your recovery program looking like? Are you getting into the pool to do some pool work to try and reduce the lactate acid? What are you doing straight after the game to flush out lactate acid from your body, which is probably building up ahead of your second spell when you come onto the bowl? And it's blooming difficult to get your body going if you're full of lactate. So are you drinking enough water? It really is about workload. And recovery techniques and understanding of recovery techniques rather than a technical issue. So a little bit more information, and we can put in some hypothetical stuff, but a little bit more information would give us a much fuller answer and a much more specific answer. But generally, as soon as you finish bowling, you need to get rid of all of that stuff that's flowing around the body. Ice baths are fantastic. Contrast baths are a great way. You go from cold to hot and do that a few times. It helps to flush out the acid that's kicking around the body and making it stiff. Making sure you drink plenty, making sure you eat well, making sure you sleep well. Nigel Stockhill, who was England S&C coach for 9 years, would always say to the boys after they finished bowling, you want fluid, you want good food, and you want good sleep. And if you get those three things in, then you're going to be looking at recovering that much better. But also go back to, what does your week look like? How many days are you bowling on the trot? What number of overs are you bowling in practice? Because it is going to have a negative impact upon that last spell on a Saturday or Sunday where your pace drops.
It's interesting that, yeah, he seems to be doing more than he's capable of doing. And is it worth trying to spend some time building up that capacity as well as the recovery side of things, which you're absolutely right with, Gareth? My question would be, is it worth thinking about some kind of phase of building up work capacity, or would that be too much? Would that just add to the volume so much that it would be, it would be counterproductive, and it's something you have to work on when you haven't got active cricket games going on? That might be something worth thinking about.
Good question. Yeah, and you work that within your workload. So I always remember Andy Caddick coming back from pre-season, and we'd be bowling, and I would always try and look after him because I realised what a huge commodity he was to the team and to me as a coach. But he'd always say to me that he needs to bowl in the morning and in the afternoon as well, whenever we do nets, because that's the way that he gets the volume into his legs. Now, that came towards the end of his career. So he had all of that experience of probably going through the phase that you are at the moment, Blake, and going through this lactate period and not being able to do it. So he built a huge amount of experience of what his body needed, and also the way that sports science has helped us over the years to model some of these programs around people. And as a result, he knew that he needed to bowl in the morning and in the afternoon, because that replicated what he was going to be then doing when he played any games. The same thing could happen to you. So it could be that you only bowl twice in a week. So let's say you've got a Tuesday session and a Thursday session. You know, if you can go out at lunchtime and bowl for 30 minutes and just bowl at a stump and possibly bowl, I don't know, a spell-like number of deliveries. So say you bowl a six-over spell, so 36 balls, bowling at a stump and simulating in your mind how you're going to bowl in the game. And then you've got practice in the evening, and then you go and bowl another 36 balls in that session. Then you'll be replicating the needs of the weekend. Then you could have a day off on the Wednesday and maybe then replicate it on a Thursday, but making sure that you've got your recovery processes in place. So that would do a bit of both, a bit of what David's suggesting, which is to increase your capacity, but also spreading it out well enough that you're managing your workload appropriately to hit the weekend running, so you can actually nail your second spell and become more effective in that as well. So that's the idea of programming in and amongst your workload get your recovery right. And if you do that, I'm sure that your second spell at the weekend is going to come out a bit better than it is at present.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be bowling either. If you haven't got the opportunity to bowl, you can still take advantage of more general work capacity training, running, and maybe doing some kind of circuit training in the gym or something like that. Something that is more general conditioning work, but is designed to build up the capacity of your heart and lungs and muscles to work over a longer period, in a way that's as specific as you can get towards bowling. In other words, a short burst of activity followed by a rest, another short burst of activity, intermittent activity. That's the phrase I was looking for. Foam rolling as well is another thing. I don't know if you mentioned that, Gareth, in the recovery side of things.
Yeah, really good.
But foam rolling is a great way. If you haven't got access to massage, and most of us haven't, unfortunately, unless you're at the elite level, foam rolling is sort of a massage light that you can work on the quality of the tissues. Next question's from our old friend Cups. And Cups has also got a bowling issue. Cups says, most of the cricket I've been playing this summer is timed cricket. For these games, we only play with one ball for both innings. Unfortunately, this leads me to having a 37 overs old ball, which has not been taken care of. So there's virtually no movement. While I can bowl a tight spell, going about 3 and over, I can't take many wickets as I struggle to get any movement. So how do I bowl wicket-taking spells with the old ball?
Yeah, well, I'd actually call this an opportunity rather than a challenge, because there is an opportunity here for you and maybe two or three of your mates in the team to get very good at a skill that you can take with you anywhere around the world and in any game situation that most bowlers won't have. So the bowlers that would bowl... start any innings would normally have a brand new ball in which to work, and anybody who's bowling, say the 11th over, would only have 11 overs worth of rough and tumble on a cricket ball. But you've got a 37 overs old ball, and it's an opportunity to learn different skills, and those skills can be about how you shine the ball to get the ball to reverse or to have contrast swing, which will make the ball to go against to shine rather than in its conventional fashion. It gives you an opportunity to change fields and bowl with straighter fields when the ball isn't moving in a sort of like new ball swingy fashion. So you can go wicket to wicket, have men in front of the stump. So you see that often in India and Sri Lanka and Bangladesh, where the slip fielders will be positioned in front of the stumps rather than that behind the stumps, and then you have to apply different skills. You can learn things like having subtle variations in pace. So you talk about somebody like Dilhara Fernando, who was very good at this in subcontinent conditions, where he would operate a pace less of his top pace. So if his top pace was 140 Ks, then most of the over he'd be going through a range of 3 or 4 kilometres an hour for the over, and then towards the back end, he'd stick one in at top pace to try and get an LBW. There is so many opportunities here for you to develop different types of skills rather than just running up with a new ball, landing it on a length and expecting it to go to slip, which I think if we view things as an opportunity as opposed to a challenge or a brick wall, then we can start the process of building stuff around. So yeah, to me, ball shining, getting the ball to contrast or reverse swing, bowling with straighter fields, so attacking straighter fields, and variation of pace. And I'm not talking about bunging any slower balls. I'm talking about varying your pace over a range and then having a real intent to your quicker ball. And all of a sudden, there's three tactics there that you probably didn't have before you asked this question.
One of the things that surprised me when I was seeing the club cricket being played in India recently was that there is a certain attitude that pervades bowling with the old ball. That I guess it's because of local knowledge, but it very, very quickly do players give up on the idea of bowling outsides. And in the games that I saw, they played cricket over 5 sessions, but draws were far and away the most common occurrence, because it's very hard to bowl a side out twice in a game that only lasts for 5 sessions. The game that I watched, the team were only had about 30 overs at the end of the game to bowl, and I said straight away, well, there's not much chance of you bowling them out. And they said, oh no, there's zero chance of bowling out. There's no chance we're ever going to bowl anybody out in 30 overs. And I found that an interesting attitude, in that You know, local knowledge, and probably once the shine goes off the ball, which happens very quickly on the Mumbai Maidens, once the shine goes off the ball, it's pretty much all over. It becomes a batsman's game there, and I accept that as the local knowledge. But I was surprised slightly by the complete giving up on any chance of winning a game at all. And I thought to myself, well, I just wonder if perhaps if you have a change of attitude and you look at it from a positive point of view and you look at ways to get people out rather than saying, well, that's the end of that game, perhaps that change of attitude is enough to now and again pull something from the fire and bowl a team out in towards the end of an inning. So I guess what I'm saying is, alongside those very practical strategies, Gareth, that you've come up with there, I think it's important to stay positive and look for ways that you can think about taking wickets, because if you give up on it, then it's never going to work. But if you're still trying, you're still trying to come up with new ways of doing it, then you're giving yourself a chance, even if it's just an outside chance.
Absolutely. So you look at it as an opportunity and a challenge, as opposed to an impossible situation or circumstance. And it only takes a captain and a bowler to start that process, because you've only got to get somebody three down. And we all know how easy it is to lose your wicket as a batter, particularly when there's nothing or perceived nothing on the game, because it's always going to be a draw in Mumbai on the Maidens when there's 30 overs to bat. Well, you know, somebody goes in thinking, oh, well, I'll just bat for a bit and then that'll be the game done. You nick them out, or you get them LB, or you get the ball to reverse, or you put two men on the drive leg side and just go straight at middle and leg. Whatever the case may be, they pop up a catch, you get them three down, and who knows? And there have been so many wins across Test match history. You look at the Botham's Ashes, the Headingley game. Mm. You know, there's a classic example. Even after Ian Botham had done his unbelievable thing in the third innings of a game, it still took an England side and Bob Willis to make a decision that he was just going to go hell for leather and hammer the pitch to death as best he could to get the ball to go up and down and to put the fear of God into people. And all of a sudden, they're five down and the game's on again. And it doesn't take a lot. But if you don't see it as an opportunity to start off with, it will never happen. You've got to make it plausible. But it only takes one or two people to do that. And often, it's the captain and one bowler which starts that process.
Well, there we go, Cups. Don't give up. Have some strategies in your back pocket for when things aren't going all your way and you aren't able to swing it all over the place. And know that a lot of times your plan is not going to come to anything, and that's that. But sometimes, occasionally, it's going to work. And you, that day, you are going to be the hero.
It's soapbox time here on the show, and this week it's David. David has got 1 minute, starting from now, mate. Over to you.
One of the problems that I see from time to time, certainly in club cricket, is that players like playing in a certain team and they don't necessarily want to go up a level or down a level because, you know, they're playing with their friends and they're enjoying what they're doing. And it's important, I think, to, if you've got more than one side in your club, to be able to have players who can move up and down between teams. And I think that's driven very much by the culture of a side and a squad. And if players trust each other, then you can have players with different personalities, different levels of talent, different jobs to do in the side, and still have a team that performs on the pitch. You know, the sum of the parts is lesser than the synergy of the team, as they say in business. So I think it's very important for captains, even at club level, to know that if you build up trust, then you're going to have a side that performs better than the individual players within it. And that is all we've got time for on this week's show. We are just going to do a couple of things before we leave and carry on with other things. And the first of those is that we need to decide on the winner of this week's competition. Now, of course, the prize on offer is an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. You can find out more by heading to the webpage and having a look at that. And we had Cupsy's question about bowling with the old ball and Blake's question about struggling to bowl at his usual pace in his second spell. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I love Blake's question. I thought it was a real good one, and one that a lot of people, and
particularly uninitiated guys in terms of workload and recovery and strategies around how many overs to bowl would be asking. So I think it's a really good one this week. Blake, you've won the course.
Congratulations, Blake. Build up that fitness, get that recovery going, and get some tips from our online coaches who are many and varied. Now, if someone was listening to this and they wanted to get their question answered and they wanted the chance to win the prize, Gareth, how would they get in touch with us in order to do that?
Well, you can give us a call, fella, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. Our other ways of getting in touch is through Twitter at PitchVisionAcad. You can send us a short message there, or you can go to Facebook, facebook.com/PitchVisionAcademy, and post your question on there alongside all the usual Facebook-style shenanigans that we've got going on. Everything from very serious topics like what kind of cricket bat to buy and what kind of training works best when you're at Nets, all the way through to silly things like I posted a picture of He-Man last week, and instead of having the Sword of Grayskull, he had a cricket bat. But, you know, that's ridiculous. But, you know, we try and get as much as we can on there, from the funny to the serious, and hopefully there's going to be something that appeals to you. If you want to listen to this show every week, and I hope that you do, you're quite welcome to, then you can subscribe to the show using just about any podcatching program you like. iTunes is a popular one, so is Apple Podcasts, so is the Android Podcasts app, which there are many and varied of those, Dog Catcher, Downcasts is a good one, and even if you've got a Windows phone, you're one of those five people in the world with a Windows phone, you can find us on there as well. And if you want to use the RSS feed instead of doing that, then head over to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link to find out what you need to do with that RSS feed if you can't find us in your normal podcatching program. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth.
Cheers, fella.